I'm Cliff Roach, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm absolutely delighted to be here. I wish I'd have worn a ring, damn it. He didn't last 5 minutes either. Did you dock him anything for that? Make him wear a red shirt like Ralph over there. Well, but he wouldn't do anything either. I would love to thank the committee and everybody concerned with the Brazos Conference for asking my Al-Anon and I to come out here and share with you. They asked us to come on Thursday, which I thought was kind of strange, but I have known quite a few Texans, so we came out. That's the greatest thing we could have done because, I'm so loose, I'm liable to fall asleep in my own talk tonight. I'm in this relaxed, and I can't remember when. And we got here, and everybody's so warm, and it's so beautiful here, and so peaceful. And then I was stretched out on the bed, and my wife said, "Hey, there's a meeting." Then I thought, "Oh, I'm just so tired." So I just came down, and old Homer talked about 2 minutes, and I didn't sleep till about 3 a.m. Just 2 minutes, and I had goose pimples that high on me. People that many years of sobriety with that kind of beautiful program and that kind of love shining around, I just got so turned on, I tossed and turned all night. And then this beautiful lady down here had that 11-step meeting this morning, and I don't know about anybody else there, but I had a profound spiritual experience. And I was very grateful that I'd come out early, and I was very grateful I got to share in that. Chuck said it, you're beautiful people, and just looking at you, you're beautiful. And I'm always especially grateful when my Al-Anon can come with me, when the two of us can go to something because we can share it that way, and then I can always introduce her as my Al-Anon. It's kind of my way of getting even, they introduce, "Have you met my alcoholic? Sit up. I never know which paw to put out, My buddy Al McGee, he says, "They are not at fault, they seem to have been born." I know all about them. They sit around those little rooms and talk about releasing me. They never put it to a vote. Have you noticed that? They never came around and said, "Do you like being released?" I'd say, "No, I would not like being." If you asked me to make a list of my 5,000 favorite things, being released would not be on the goddamn list. I am a fighter. Not a good one. And that's dangerous, I'll tell you. But drunk or sober, I'm a fighter. Come on, let's go, pack. I'm releasing you. You can't get the black belt till you get the smile down. You just can't release Buddy. But you have to do that. I'm releasing you. I've always said the Mona Lisa was an Al-Anon. Kind of explains it, doesn't it? But I don't know. It's a tough life being an Al-Anon. You have to work this program and drink too, Jesus. Yeah. I've tried that, boy. If you call what she does drinking, did you ever watch one of them drink? That'll drive you right out of your head. My buddy, Big Ken, I sobered up about 2 years before him. And finally came to the program, and his first night on the program, I was going to drive him up to Los Angeles to a meeting. And he was sitting there, and Pat does not drink in front of newcomers, don't get me wrong. But, we'd known, Ken and I had drunk together for years, and she knew Kenny like a brother. And she's happened to have a glass of wine that night, so she's talking to us there, and she's sipping on this wine, and she's talking, and she's sipping. Pretty soon, Kenny got out of the conversation altogether. He just went. And after about 5 minutes, he said, "You ain't drinking goddamn beer enough!" She was really cruel that night. She said, "I think I'll save the rest for tomorrow." I drove him all the way to L.A., never said a word, just sat there. She is a pitiful drinker. She went, was it Christmas before last, she went down to the liquor store for her yearly supply. You know, for Christmas, she went to get her yearly supply of booze, a pint. Pint. And she, it's that rum and brandy crap, you know, they make hot drinks. Ugh, you know, no drunk, you throw those things up and the batter gets in your nose and you can't get it out, you know. No drunk drinks, those things, you know. You make them for other people, right? And she opens the, she comes back with this booze and opens the cupboard. I heard her giggling out in the kitchen. I went out there. So what are you giggling about? She said, she points, and the bottle from last year was still there. She said, I forgot. Did you ever forget where a bottle was? No, sirree. I'm in the cupboard in the kitchen, Cliff. Boop, 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 boop. I never forgot where your bottle was. Well, he keeps it under here. Because I don't drink like them. That's why she's in Al-Anon and I'm here, you know. And before I pass this moment by, I want to say that I love to tease Al-Anons because I love Al-Anon. I like everything about Al-Anon. I have seen greater miracles, as great a miracles anyway, in Al-Anon as I've seen Alcoholics Anonymous. Because the miracle is not drinking or not drinking. The miracle is learning to be alive and to love to be alive. That's the miracle. Because I never could stand life. And I, you know, I've met a lot of cuckoo Al-Anons. And I've seen them change and grow and, you know, become happy, useful, loving human beings. Now, I certainly love Al-Anon. I love mine anyway. Yours too, if you give me half a chance. So I don't want to be teasing, you know, without saying that. But I didn't drink like them. I love to drink. Oh, I love to drink. I hear lunatics get up to these podiums at AA meetings, and I just want to punch their face. They go, I never cared for the taste of alcohol. Huh? You know, how would you care for the taste of these knuckles here? I love the taste of booze. I just love it. I just love, oh, I love rum and brandy, and I love scotch. But I love sour mash bourbon whiskey the best. Oh, I love sour mash. There, somebody went, Yellowstone was my favorite, and but I.W. Harbor, Jack Daniels, any good sour mash. And, you know, my old man, when I was 17, I come from an Irish Catholic family. Oh, really? Yes. You know, hardly any of us here. You know, if it wasn't for us, they'd have these meetings in phone booths. You know, and my old man showed me when I was about 17, you know, you take a big triple shot of I.W. Harper Yellowstone or something and a little bit of water, just enough to rinse your mouth, and then you just take that shot and say, bang. Oh, and it just burns. I love that burning going down. And as Clancy says, just boom at the bottom. You know. Then you just take the water and you swallow the water. And then the best part, you breathe out through your nose. I got going up that one night at home. Three newcomers just got up and said, oh, the hell with that. Never saw them again, you know. I'm really careful with that now, you know. Oh, is there anything like that? And that booze just, and you just breathe in and out and feel that wonderful, intoxicating fumes. And then you have another, you know, and another. And I don't know what it's like for you. I only have this one story, and it was very expensive to get. And I'm not going to go get it. Not going to get a new one for you, I'll tell you for sure. But anyway, I like about 40 minutes after I start drinking. That's the time that I always remember. About 40 minutes into my drinking, there was about 8 minutes. She must have had an hour. I don't know. But there was about 40 minutes where I was all right. You know, even the last horrible last couple years of my drinking, there was about 8 minutes, that's about 40 minutes of my drinking, where I just would sit on that greasy green chair and just, you know, and I wasn't afraid and I wasn't angry, and the world was a beautiful place, and old Cliff was okay, you know. A lot of times right at the end of the 8 minutes, down it went, you know. But I, in my lifetime, see, that's the only, if you would have stopped me on the street and said, define serenity, I would have said it's about 8 minutes, 40 minutes into my drinking. And you would have walked away and said, that guy's nuts, you know. But that's only serenity I ever knew in my life. That's what I thought serenity was. And then, boy, you know, I never met anybody on this program on it, getting ready for it, after it, any time. I met anybody had more fun drinking than I did, boy. I love to have fun. You know what I mean, in AA. I love to say that in AA meetings. You know, fun. And their eyes glaze over. You know, like, you don't want to say that in an Al-Anon meeting. No. They don't care for fun, you know. They go, remember that? Don't you think you had a few too many? I used to say, no, you had a few too few. Oh. But I was just like, I was like that dog in the Call of the Wild, you know, I could not resist fun. You know, I'd have a day with it all but out to get me and got me. And I owed $1 million and didn't have a nickel. And the boss was ready to fire me and everything was screwed up. And old Bill would come by and say, come on, Cliff, let's go have some fun. Oh, I'd just get out there and get among them, boy. Oh, I had fun. Lots and lots and lots and lots of times, you know what I mean. Getting the crap beat out of you, going to jail. Fun, you know. See, social drinkers don't understand that, you know. You know, finding your car at the bottom of a ravine in the morning, huh? With you in it. Fun, you know. You know, and people do this when they look at you when you do things like that. Al-Anons have fun. Oh, yes, yes. We had lots of fun last night, didn't we, Cliff? Not me, boy. I had fun. Lots and lots. But see, I don't know, probably none of you had blackouts. You see, that got in the way of my fun a lot of the time. Because right up to a point, I'm just a barrel of laughs. But there's nobody here old enough to know what I mean, I don't think. But I was a kamikaze drinker. You know, there was a point in my drinking I'd be going along, just have the time of my life, just fun, you know. And lampshades on the head and everything, and I'd pick up this drink, and this little voice in my head would say, this is the one, Cliff. If you drink this one, you're going to do tricks. And you know what I did, don't you? Well. And I never knew that was being powerless over alcohol. And then about four drinks after that, oh, I got in a lot of trouble. I was raised in this Irish Catholic family where all the men were really tough. My old man was tough, and his brothers were tough, and I mean, they were really rough and tough guys, and I had this back problem. I had a big yellow streak down the middle of it, and, you know, I weighed about 100 pounds, and, but I wanted to be tough. I mean, I chased that right up to the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, wanting to be tough. And if I could get enough sauce in me, see, I could be brave. See, I always thought tough and brave were synonyms. That's wrong. That's the second step. That's insanity. See, about the time I'd get enough booze to be brave, I would lose my muscle coordination, see? I became one of the great beating takers of all time. Oh, I would just take these horrible, legendary beatings, just horrible. If I could see my lip, I'd know it was a big night. If I could see it all, I was grateful, you know. I love to tell them one time four other guys and I came down from Bakersfield to Long Beach to have fun one weekend, and I woke up in the morning in this Fleabag hotel, and I thought I was blind. Well, I had bled on this pillow all night, and it dried, see? So when I came up, the pillow came with me. So this other guy led me over to the sink, and we threw water on this pillow for, I don't know, a half an hour. I was smothering in there, you know? Finally, we went... And there was a mirror on this dresser. I said, put the pillow back. Oh, Charles Lawton looked better in The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Oh, I never forget the guys with me. Do you have friends like this? They said, you were great, Roach. You got up 19 times. You know? Kind of friends I had my whole life, you know. And that's kind of my drunk log, if anybody dozed off there, you know. Lots and lots and lots and lots of times I had fun. And I always thought it was going to be fun this time. And then I'd have those damn blackouts and I'd be beaten up or I'd go to jail or I'd lose friends or I'd wreck cars. And I had little children with their eyes about this big around filled with terror the next day. And that's the way I lived all my life. And I met this lovely lady down here in college, and the way she puts it, the rocks in her head fit the holes in mine. And so we entered this 20-year suicide pact. And no offense, Bill, but we had a dual disease. We had alcoholism and Catholicism. And we had a kid every 9 months and 20 minutes. And that's what it seemed like every time I come out of a blackout. Who's that? You know, and they're all right when they're little, like kittens, but geez, when they grow up, and the years went by, and, you know, there were five of them, and they were all cuckoo, and not as cuckoo as me, but, and I wasn't as cuckoo as her, really, when it comes right down. I loved when she had that tick, pre-Al-Anon tick. Real quick, like those little birds down the beach. But I finally became a school teacher, and can you imagine a drunk like me in school? And we moved to Oceanside. Now, Oceanside, California is about 28 miles north of San Diego, and you probably guessed it's on the ocean, huh? I knew you were quick. And I became, if it's not a contradiction, I became a relatively successful school teacher there, and a high school teacher, and life went on, and my alcoholism progressed. I became very paranoid about blackouts because, you know, what I do in blackouts, you know, they have a tendency to call you up to Sacramento and say, could we have your teacher's license back, please? You know, biting a bartender in the face is not social behavior, you know. And that's the kind of thing I do all the time when I'm drunk. But, you know, I got by. You know, yeah, we get by somehow, some way. And I fought and scraped to keep not have those blackouts. You know, and the years went by, and I became more and more and more and more dependent on alcohol to live. You know, I stopped being a good time Charlie, and I've got to drinking because drinking is necessary to survive. And that's the kind of drinking I like to remember. But as I say, I was a pretty successful school teacher there. And in 1965, another teacher and I, we're both surfers, were then, I still am. I'm the oldest, fattest surfer on the Pacific Coast, but I didn't say the best. I said the oldest and fattest. And we got this surfboard shop down on the beach. What a deal. We're going to make $1 million, you know, never have to teach again, you know. A guy donated us this little building right on, can you imagine, right on the beach. Oh, it was all vandalized and everything. And we put the windows in and painted it all up and got a refrigerator. About 3 months later, we got some surfboards, no big hurry, you know. Give you an idea. We had two chaise lounge chairs, too. Don't forget those. You know? Yeah, we became sunset connoisseurs. Oh, we love those sunsets, you know. We used to measure the sunsets by martinis. About a 7 tonight, Woody. You know, the best one we ever had was a 15 martini sunset. Oh, it was glorious. You know? And the son and Woody and I went right together. They found us in the morning with sunburned mouths. Remember that? That's bad enough to be sick, huh? But I don't know. In 1965, we made a lot of money in the summer. Everything was fine. But in the winter, of course, nobody wants to rent surfboards in the winter. And I went down on a Sunday morning in February of 1965 to fix a surfboard. And that's all I went down to do. I was not a morning drinker in 1965, so far as I know. I'll probably get corrected tomorrow. So far, as the guy says in the Senate hearing, so far as I recall, I was not a morning drinker. I learned that from those guys, see? So I'm sanding this board, fixing this board, and I got thirsty. I thought there might be a Coke or something in the refrigerator. And I opened the refrigerator, and Woody, my partner, or the guy that really owned the shop, he had left about this much vodka. He'd been there the night before, in a half pint, about a drink. And there was some orange juice in the refrigerator. I thought, not gonna. Screwdriver tastes good. I didn't feel all that well anyway in the morning, so there was only enough for one. I drank that screwdriver, and I went on about my business, you know, getting ready to glass the board. I love to remember this because about 20 minutes went by, and my mind talked to me. Remember that? I used to always listen, didn't you? What? I have met the enemy. He lives right here. I don't listen to me anymore. Yeah. But anyway, my mind said that morning, after about 20 minutes, my mind said, what a filthy trick that was. You finished Woody's booze off like that. Why don't you go up and get him a pint? You know, just a nice guy, you know. And that afternoon I got him a fifth. And I ended up just drunk. I mean, falling down. The shop was ruined. The board would never be the same. You know, I was just stoned. And I didn't know what had happened to me. You know, I'd gotten drunk and I had no intention of getting drunk. And I lurched home and told Pat about it, and Pat had found this thing in the paper about Alcoholics Anonymous, and I called him. Purest motive in the world. That's the only time I ever came to AA with a pure motive. And a guy, Stan, came out the next day and started taking me to meetings, and I went to a few participation discussion meetings where they hurt my feelings, because alcoholism is not my problem. Sensitivity, that's my problem. And these guys, well, none of you are probably sensitive, but... these guys kept hurting my feelings. They said rude things to me, so I quit going to those. I kind of liked a speaker meeting there on Sunday night in Oceanside, 6:30 in the evening. And I used to be the last one in, you know, getting that last chair by the door. They had one of those signs that said, we care. Oh, phonies. I hung around maybe 35 seconds one night. Nobody threw their arms around me. So I knew they were fakes. And... I used to like those speakers that get in once in a while, you know, who had been in 39 prisons and 12 nut houses and, you know, killed three people with their bare hands. You know, things that give you stature on the program. And how does that go? Two jails equals one nut house, three nut houses equals, you know, I don't know. Anyway, I'd never done that, and I thought they were really entertaining. But, you know, regular AAs like you and me that would get up and share, you know, they'd have a speaker every Sunday, and it was boring. It was the most boring place I had, and I hate to tell this, but that's the way it goes. You know, it was the most boring place I'd ever been. Oh, sounded like everybody's name was Clem, and, you know, his wife's name was Martha, and what I heard was Clem and Martha had been good, decent, worthwhile, happy folk their whole lives, but they had drunk too much, and after they drank too much for a few years, we really got interfering with their lives. And so they had put the plug. And they had come to AA. And now they were swell folks again. You know, they had been rehabilitated. My hero in 1965 was a guy named Eldridge Cleaver. Yeah, he was a black militant terrorist. And, well, that was my politics in 1965, was blow it up or burn it down. I didn't care which, you know. I was for peace. You know, and if you weren't for peace, I'd kill you. Had this peace symbol I could use for a weapon, you know. And I went down to hear Eldridge talk down there, and he was talking that night about the prison system in California, about how they were always trying to rehabilitate him. He says, well, you know, what they had never known was he had never been rehabilitated. And you can't rehabilitate somebody who's never been rehabilitated. And that's how I felt in Alcoholics Anonymous. Sometime or another, you clowns at some place in your life had been all right. I never have been all right. I can remember little bits and snatches of my life when I was like 4 years old. And when I was 4 years old, I was ticked off. I was just seething with anger when I was 4 years old. And when I was 4 years old, I had a big hollow feeling in the pit of my stomach, and I know it today to be terror. I was afraid of everything. I had vague feelings of impending doom and immediate feelings of impending doom. And I was full of resentment and anger and hatred, and I just went through life that way, just snarling. And these clowns, you know, Clem and Martha, they were all right now, you know. And so I knew they were not sensitive. Remember the show Laugh-In 65? That was the big show. I used to have this insane desire to leap up in the middle of the meeting and say, "Booming!" Remember that guy? Oh, God, I wanted to do that. Oh, booming! If I could have had a drink, I would have done it, you know, but I was sober. And for people like me, there is nothing in the world worse than being sober. That's the most horrible place to be. Dry. Anyway, that didn't last long. I remember one night I was having pizza and spaghetti, and it just seemed, this is about 5 months after I'd gone to AA and 3 months after I dropped out. And I thought, hell, pizza and spaghetti, a glass of wine couldn't hurt. Huh? And it did. She fainted, but I was all right. You know. And nothing happened. Nothing. A couple of weeks later, I was teaching this millionaire how to surf. And he invited me up to his millionaire pad to have a millionaire drink with him. And nothing. Cheap sucker only gave me one, too. That's how I get him. Be a millionaire, I guess. I don't know. Nothing happened, you know. And so I knew you folks down here at the A&A were phonies. You know, that, what they call it, allergy. That's the silliest thing I ever heard, allergy. You know, I got an allergy to the sun. You want an allergy? Try that. I go to a doctor, he burns things off and cuts things off. So you know what? I don't go in the sun. I never had to have a sponsor for that. When she looks at me funny, I don't say, "I'm going to take my shirt off and go out in the yard." I just stay out of the goddamn sun, that's all. Now, unfortunately, I love to surf. I love to surf. You might say I am obsessed with surfing. Do you know what I do? I get up at dawn. I go out and go surfing. As soon as the sun starts getting warm, I get out. I control my surfing. And I don't need a sponsor for that either. So these old fools with their routine about, you know. Anyway, a couple weeks later, I was up in Saratoga, and a friend of mine broke out a fifth Irish whiskey, and I got drunk. So then I was drunk for a couple of years. That's a slip. And then I start coming back to AA when the heat was on. I don't know if any of you guys did that. I'd, when they were really going to put it to me, I'd go to AA for a while, you know, and they were still, Clem and Martha were still there, you know, and change their overalls even, you know. Anyway, life went on and got worse and worse and worse. You know, and that's what those old fools would tell me. If you go back out and drink, it's going to get worse. And I'd go out and it'd get worse, you know. Anyway, I'm going to tell you this one more story, and then I'm going to get sober. Woo, hurry. Time flies when you're having fun. Speak for yourself, Cliff. As I said, I, among other things I teach speech and drama, things like that. And this principal calls me in one year, and he said, "Hey, Cliff," he said, "they're having a debate and speech tournament down at San Diego State College. It's 30 miles away." He said, "Why don't you get some kids? I think that'd really be good. Kids, you know, debate could be good for them." He's the boss, so I found six rum-dums willing to give it a go. And down we go the 30 miles to San Diego State. And we got down there, we were amazed. We found that these speech tournaments are big deals in California. They are in Texas, too. There were like 50 schools participating in this tournament, like 500 contestants, all of them dressed like I am tonight, better. And we were in Levi's and sweatshirts. What the hell we know? It's the first time we'd ever been there. You know? We didn't win a round. I mean, we got annihilated. Now, I don't know what kind of drunk you are, but I don't like to lose. It ticks me off. And I went in the coach's room, and they all knew each other, about 20 of them there. They all were friends. And so they ignored me, it seemed to me. And so I hung around there all day so they could ignore me longer. You know how we are. There's one guy there really irritated me. He had a lot of hair. That bothered me right away. It was one of those steel, he had a lot of gray hair. You know the perfect some guys have? You know, there's not a hair out of, had a hair out of place, you know. And he had about a $700 suit on, you know, and the other coaches did this when they went in front of him, you know, kind of like Clancy. And kissed his ring. No. And all of a sudden, about 2 p.m, this clown turns to me and he says, where are you from? God, I was grateful to be spoken to. I said, Oceanside. He said, oh, where's that? 30 miles up the... The guy gave me a resentment. Probably none of you would have gotten one of those, huh? I don't mean a resentment. I mean a resentment, that kind, you know. And I went back to that Oceanside. That's kind of a ghetto school. I went through the school. I found the 50 smartest kids. I went through the IQ files. Doug found the 50 smartest kids. I'd stop a kid in the hall and say, you're a debater. Kid says, I don't want to debate. I said, I didn't ask you that. Get your butt in the room. And they went. They say, we don't have willpower. You know. And the other teachers went home at 4, 4:30. I'm there 9 o'clock at night, 9:30, 10 o'clock every night. You know, one or two kids every half hour. Boy, and I'm screaming and yelling. I'm cursing. I'm coaching. Some reporter one time asked one of my students, what's the secret of your coach's success? The kid said, terror. He wasn't lying. You got any idea how much work that is? Do you have any idea how tense you can get when you make 50 people do what they don't want to do? Man, the nerves hang out this far off the ends of your fingers, you know? And you just get wound up and you're just... Every muscle in your body. You got to drink when you do that. Lucky for me, out in the car. And I had a bottle in the car all day, half a pint, whatever Thrifty had in the basket that week. You know, what the hell. And I kept the glove compartment, was unopened. I never touched it all day. I just laid there and waited. You know, it got warm. Go get him, Cliff, baby. I'm waiting for you, darling. And I can do anything when that's waiting for me there. See, I don't have to drink all day. I just going to know that I'm going to drink when I get through here. Nothing like that. Makes it better. And I'd finish with that last kid. Can I, Mr. Roach? Yeah, get that out of here. Frederick March. Get in that car and I'd open up that cheap vodka. I had to smoke those cheap cigars, too. And I'd light a cigar and I'd puff on that cigar. And then I always drank half of that, half a pint. Just... Oh, is there anything like that greasy vodka? Just slide down there. Immediate results, you know. All the psychiatrists laid end to end could not do me one bit of good as that quarter of a pint of Thrifty vodka. Old Smirnoff socks or whatever it was, you know. And I'd puff on that cigar in the dark in that car, and I'd say, God damn, I'm a hell of a coach. And I'd finish, and I'd hide the bottle. I've always wondered about that. I guess I thought they'd fingerprint it in the morning or something. I don't know. On the bed. Then I'd sit in the dark, and I'd finish that cigar, and I'd sit there in that car, and I'd smoke that cigar. And I'd think about that gray-haired son of a bitch down in San Diego. Never a day went by where I didn't remember him. And then I'd go home and get drunk. And the last 5 years of my drinking, I drank at home. And I'm a real foul-mouthed drunk, and I'm a real violent drunk. And I'm a real critical, angry, sarcastic, mean drunk. And I got drunk every night at home. And I turned that house into an insane asylum. And if you're here tomorrow afternoon, you can hear just what of a nut house it was. I'll just tell you a couple of little highlights, and then so you can come hear Pat tomorrow. My oldest son, David, was working his way through high school as a hashish salesman. And, Everybody's got to do something, you know. Oh, he was beautiful. You know, it was the late 60s, you know, and he has hair down to his butt, and his head goes like this all the time. The headband, remember, you know. He looked like one of those little dolls in the back of a car. Call his mother, man. Hey, man, what's for dinner? He took LSD like it was popcorn. Oh, they're weird, that bunch. Oh, they scared the hell out of me. You know, you'd be right in the middle of a sentence. He'd see those lights. He'd say, what was that? I'd say, I don't know. What was it? You know, wasn't too sure myself, you know. God, they all hated my guts, and I hated their guts. A bunch of dope fiends, and not as much as I hated her. And her, not as much as she hated me. You know, it was a swell place to live. You should have been there. But I built that speech team, by God. And in a couple of years, we won one of those speech tournaments. But I didn't say anything to the gray-haired guy. Wasn't time yet. I can wait. The next year, there were, I think, 12 or 13 tournaments. We won all the tournaments. Wasn't time, you know. I think revenge is better than Christmas, don't you? Then the next year, there was a tournament. There were 25 schools competing in that tournament. And my team scored more sweepstakes points than the other 24 schools combined. Then I went up to that gray-haired sucker and I put my nose right against his and I said, do you know where Oceanside is now? Of course, he just looked blank. You know, he said, what are you talking about? I said, don't you remember about 4 years ago, you said to me, Oceanside, where's that? And he said, we just moved here from Nebraska. I didn't know where it was. I'm in the right place tonight. We're in the arms of God tonight. I'm going to write my people. There's a lot of people identify tonight, I'll say. I like to watch some alcoholics go, you're my kind of drunks. And that's the story of my life. I should have just told that and got on with it, you know, because that's how I lived my whole life. 4 years, this guy's in his bed every night in San Diego. And I'm up in Oceanside. I'll get to you, son of a... He didn't have the foggiest idea I was getting him. He's just going through life, and I'm dying, rotting away. And that's how I lived my whole life, you know. And you know, when you live like that, you have to drink. That's all there is to it. You have to, or you'll blow up. I was talking up in L.A., we got HBO, was a while back. Pat got it, and, you know, I got home real late from L.A., and I was all excited, you know, and I thought, well, I'll turn on a movie, and I'll lie on the couch here and get sleepy. You know, so just for a few minutes. So I turned this movie on. I laid out. Some guy told me later the name of the movie was The Scanners. I only saw 20 seconds of it. And in this movie, as soon as I turn on, these two guys are having a staring contest of some kind, you know. And they look at each other. And the other guy looks back. And they're both sweating. They're really looking, you know. And then the first guy goes, and his head blows off. I mean, they're just a neck there, you know. I didn't sleep for 3 days, you know. You know, and I'm in bed, just my head and my heels are touching the bed, you know. And while I'm lying there, I'm thinking, you know, I bet that guy should have gone to AA. You know. He lived about one day too long the way I used to live. Now, there's no doubt in my mind I would. You would have had to kill me, or I would have killed somebody. You know, that's the way it was going. I had belts carrying loaded guns around in my car, that kind of thing. And I was sober 3 years before she admit she threw it in a river or something, you know. And because there was a guy I wanted to kill, and I just couldn't find him. You know, if you're that drunk, you can't find him. You know? But that's the way I lived my whole life, you know. And right after that, Pat and I had this main event, which the neighbors have come to miss so much. And I moved out again, you know. I was a great threatener to move out. And they always asked me to stay up till then. But that night, I noticed, you know, well, I'm going to move out. And they all said, yeah, go, baby, you know. And... let's hear it for Dad moving. Oy! So I'm living down at the beach, and I figured I'd gotten rid of that bunch of dope fiends and that pre-Al-Anon with the twitch, and I'd be all right. You know, I could drink like a gentleman again. And it didn't work out that way. I was drunk all the time. And my life was going down the tubes, and I didn't know what was going on. And I left school one afternoon, didn't take a drink when I left school. I went by the house to harass Pat about money, I think. And Dave was kind of bobbing in the background there, the hashish salesman. And for some dumb reason, I asked Dave, what's it like not to have your old man around the house, Dave? And he looked me right in the eye, and he said, it's beautiful. And I told you, I'm sensitive. And he really hurt my feelings. And I went back to that dump on the beach, and I ranted and raved and screamed and yelled and whined and sniveled. But I did not take a drink that afternoon. And I think that's very significant, because it had been a long time since I hadn't had a drink in the afternoon. And I went out and sat on the screen porch and watched the ocean the rest of the afternoon and into the evening. And it was one of those sunsets that you never forget, you know, one of those magenta ones where the sky and the water and the wet sand and everything's the same color. And just about the time that that sun was going down into the water, I had what I assume you had, or you wouldn't be here with me tonight. I had that moment of clarity. And I just saw a cliff. And I saw what I had become. I saw what David saw. And I didn't like it. If you'd have told me 20 years before that that's what I would be as a result of drinking alcohol, I would have said, you're crazy. If you could have shown me, I would say, there's no way I can get like that. But when you do it a little bit at a time, a day at a time, you can become a monster and never even know it. And my God, as I understand, so let me see me that day. I saw what I had given up for the privilege of drinking alcohol. I had given up anything that was good and decent about myself. And I went scrambling through this old sea bag in the bedroom, and I dug out this. And I had read it, you know, one of my travels through AA. You know, I'd been in and out of AA 5 times by then. And I remember when I read it the one time, I thought it was poorly written. Since I'm an English teacher, you know. And amazing how it cleaned up when I went back to it this time. And I read this book for 3 days and 3 nights. I called in sick. I didn't go to work. I read this book. I ate and I slept and I read this book. And I read all the stories right to the end of the book. You know, it was the second edition, and it had the professor and the paradox story, which, you know, being egotistical school teacher, I identified with greatly. And on the third time through, it was 3 o'clock in the morning on the 13th of January, 1970. And I was on page 63 again. And it just seemed like it would be a good idea if I would kneel down on that filthy linoleum floor on that dirty dump on the beach, and if I would read that prayer out loud to myself. And I didn't know why then. I just knelt down. I read, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as you will. Relieve me of the bondage of self. And I had a spiritual awakening that morning. I had a quiet, charismatic, a knowledge that I was going to be all right. That I was in the hands of something bigger than I am. And that if I hung on to that power, that I would be all right. And I didn't have the foggiest idea that morning, nor do I have the foggiest idea today, anything about God. The only 2 things I have certainty about God are these. My God has a sense of humor. That's why he loves Alcoholics Anonymous. He's in this room tonight because he loves the laughter. And he knows we cried enough. He knows you Al-Anons cried enough. But the alcoholics know what I mean. When you're giving people pain, and you don't want to give people pain, and you watch them suffer and you watch them hurt, and you know you're doing it, and you can't stop, that's when you really feel like crying. And you can't. Because it burns too much and you can't.
This is the end of side one. Please turn your cassette over and continue to play on the other side. Thank you.
No. The only way I could laugh when I came to AA, because I was slick. I almost got the walk down again. I like to watch the new guys come in. Oh, I'm so slick I slid off chairs. You know. The only way I could laugh was like this. You know, that's if you fell down and broke your leg, you know. I was sober not 3 days, and I was up in L.A. at a meeting. I went, ha! What was that? My God thinks I'm funny. Not when I'm trying to be. It's when I'm being a bleeding deacon. It's when I'm running a meeting. You know, when I say, you guys, there's too many drug acts in here. And up in the universe, I hear, oh, yes. Oh, that ability to laugh at yourself. Is there anything better in the world than that? Because I could always see when you were a jerk. It was easy, you know. But I never could see, you know, what a fool I was. And my God lets me find out all the time now. And I can laugh about it, too. But that morning, you know, I just had that peace come into me. You know, all my life, I was sure what my problem was. My problem has always been I was never loved enough. No, I never was. My parents never loved me enough. God knows she didn't love me enough. Those kids, what I never knew was, you can't love me enough. You know, you got everybody in the world, all the people in China, everywhere. So let's all get together and love Cliff. I said, is that it? Is that all? Yeah. But that never was my problem. The problem was, I never loved enough. See, I have learned from the people of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon that love is limitless. It is unending. It is infinite. And the more you try to give it away, the more you have. You know, did you ever try to pay AA back? What a useless task. You know, call it several offices. Give me a 12-step call, goddammit, Sam. Okay. You know, I'm going to pay AA back today, you know, and go up and pick up and go to some dirty, filthy place, you know, find a dirty, filthy man. What I do whenever I get a nice, new, wet one, I always like to get down and look in their eyes. You know what I see? I saw what my eyes looked like when I was 4 years old. Lack of power was my dilemma. You know, and I look at that guy, get him cleaned up, get him to a meeting, go to a coffee shop, sit across the table from him, and the power's in his eyes. And people say they don't understand that this is a spiritual program. And I've seen guys where the light came in their eyes, they know them, they're 15 years sober, 16 years sober, 10, 9, 8, 7, 3, 2, 90 days. You know, and sick people coming in here, and they watch the light come on in their eyes and watch their behavior change, then watch their whole personality change. You know, and then you can remember that it happened to you. If it weren't for newcomers, I wouldn't last a month. I have to see it happen to you so I can remember that it happened to me. And so I knew where I had to go that morning. And I had to go over to old Bill Blake's house. He's a mad taper, too. They're all sick. He does what this goof does. And I went over to his house knocking on the door. I love to remember that. It was about, I guess it was about 6 in the evening. And it was dark. It was, you know, January 13th, 1970, so it was cold. And I like to remember standing on the porch, you know. I had been in charge of my life for 44 years. Absolute control of my own life. And you know what I accomplished? I got myself to my sponsor's porch. Alone. No family, no wife, no friends, no nothing. Nobody in the world had gave a damn about Cliff Roach. And the door, light came on, Margie opened the door, Margie's Bill's wife. I have never seen anybody so glad to see me in my whole life. Now, I'm a 5-year loser, an obnoxious loser, you probably have guessed. I was trying to straighten you out when I was here, you know, briefly. But Margie didn't care. She saw me, she said, Cliff! In the house I went, you know, pours me a cup of coffee. She said, this is wonderful. This is so nice. She said, Bill's been in such a bag lately, he's been going nuts. He's had nobody to work with. Oh, this is wonderful. And old Bill comes home about 10 minutes later and says, Cliff, oh, God damn. You know, about a half an hour, I'm thinking, anything else I can do to help you folks out? Be glad to help any way I can. I've always said they made me feel like Cliff's here. We can start AA now. You know. No, but nobody's there. Have you ever been with newcomers to me and they say, what do you mean this is a selfish program? You know, and nobody's ever had to explain that to me. See, they knew the great secret. The great secret of Alcoholics Anonymous is you can't have it unless you give it away. You can't sit and take it. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous is not a spectator sport. Alcoholics Anonymous is being a part of it and getting out and carrying the message and doing and doing and doing and doing. Now, it took my sponsor from that night a year and a half for me to learn that. He never told me that. He made me learn that because the next day he changed. No more Mr. Nice Guy the next day. The nicest thing he said to me for the next 5 years was, shut up. This illiterate electrician told a college man like me to shut up. He was really ripping on me about 3 weeks into the program, and I had to say something back to him, you know, so I said, well, I have degrees, you know. And I do, I have several. He says, a thermometer has degrees, you know, where they stick up sometimes, don't you? Hardly ever mention my degrees to him anymore. Illiterate peasant, you know. Oh, he swept me up, that guy. He hauled me everywhere in Southern California. I mean, we would go to L.A. one night, you know. He'd say, I'll pick you up at 5:30. I think, oh, God, L.A., you know. It's 2 hours up and 2 hours back. Then next night, I'd say, I'll pick you up at 6:45. Oh, San Diego, anyway. Once in a while, he'd say, I'll pick you up at 7:45. A local meeting. <You know. laughs> One night, he says, I'll pick you up at 6:00. I went crazy all day, you know. I had road maps out. Where the hell are we going, you know. He took me to this little meeting, a place called Hemet, a little bitty old town over there. It was a great meeting. You know? He took me to meetings that remind me of you guys, you know. He took me to meetings where there was laughter. He took me to meetings where there's always somebody at the door shaking your hand, and people throwing their arms around you and hugging and kissing, and people needling each other, see. I can't live without that. I don't know about you. But I got to go, you know, and I love that. And that can be dangerous for some newcomers, you know, but I believe in cruelty to newcomers, God damn it, you know. I believe in it. You know, they gave it to me, I'll tell you for sure. Al McGee, my buddy, he fills the cups up to, you know, a new guy, right to the top. Just a guy sits there. I'm a jelly donut one, you know. I get the guy that's all green and say, you want a jelly donut? Guy says, no. I say, okay. You know, so that comes. But this sponsor of mine, he took me everywhere. We just went, and everywhere I went, I found out that AA's not six guys sitting around a beer table, you know, with a lamp, beer lamp bulb hanging over it, staying sober. You know, AA is a great, big, wonderful fellowship full of exciting people, fun people, lovely people. You know, they're like they're filling this room tonight. That hooked me. That hooked me forever. He took me after I was sober a few weeks up to hear Clancy talk. Clancy's his sponsor. And I didn't know that Clancy gave that. I didn't know for 2 years that Clancy gave that talk just for me that night. You know, that when we came in, Bill shook his hand and says, I have the dummy school teacher with me. You know, because they'd been waiting for me, you know. Well, that's what he calls me, the dummy, unless he's mad, and I'm the goddamn dummy school teacher, you know. But if Clancy talked that night about the steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he made fun of him. He took each step and talked about how simple they, you know, really, they are simplistic. They are so dumb. Little simple steps, you know, and it was a riotously funny talk. He said the only thing was that he had made fun of those steps for 9 years, and he'd been drunk for 9 years, and he had worked those dumb, simple, stupid little steps for 12 years at that time, and he had been sober for 12 years. And I laughed. Oh, God, it was a funny talk. But all the time I was laughing, I was thinking, there it is, Cliff. You know, you thought you were too smart for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I almost died because of that. And if you're new tonight and you're smart, get dumb as soon as you can. As dumb as you can, as soon as you can. 3 nights later, we come back from the men's stag meeting in Laguna Beach where they'd hurt my feelings again. Oh, they loved me there. He's got it, you know, because I was a whiner and a sniveler. And I'd whine and snivel about 2 minutes, and then all these old-timers there, you know, they'd just... Oh, they loved me. They would tear me to shreds. And we're on the way home, and I'm telling Bill for about the seventh time that night about how sensitive I am. I should have quit at six. Usually he yelled at me. He was a great yeller. But that night he just turned very quiet. He was driving. He turned to me and said, Cliff, let's get this straight. You are not sensitive. You are an immature son of a bitch. I told him, well, I kind of prefer sensitive. It's all the same to you. You know? And as always, when I disagreed with him, I went home and thought about it. And he's absolutely right. He's always right. He's still my sponsor, and he's still always right. He's not right about himself a lot of the times, but then I'm never right about myself, but I'm right for the people I sponsor. That's why Alcoholics Anonymous works. I can see through your emotional BS, but I can't see through mine. That's why I have a sponsor. But I thought about that, and, you know, that's the other barrel of the shotgun. You know, alcoholism is a double-barrel shotgun for somebody like me. And the bottom barrel, the real deadly one, is my immaturity. And I know the big book says character defects, blah, 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 but I like the word immature. You know, I suffer from a terminal case of immaturity. If I don't do something about my immaturity every day of my life, it will kill me. And my Al-Anon has promised, if I die drunk, that goes on the tombstone. Cliff Roach died of immaturity. But I don't think I'm going to have to do it, because I do the things that the program asked me to do. And, you know, I'd be having one of my nervous breakdowns, and I'd go to Bill's house and whine and snivel. Well, she didn't go to Al-Anon for a while. She is weird and mean. And so I'd be having, I mean real nervous breakdowns. I'm not talking, you know what I mean when you're new. And Bill would say, why don't you go get Al and take him to a meeting? I always thought that was the strangest response. Well, how would you like that if you went to a psychiatrist and he said, why don't you go get Al and take him to... You know, that's like saying to a guy, what time is this? The horse is dead. You know, I'm having a nervous breakdown. He says, go get... You had to know Al. He was a bigger butt than me. He was a worse slipper. He was a loser. And he was full of BS, too. You know? So I go get Al. And old Al, I take Al to the meeting and listen to his crap all the way to the meeting. You know, I couldn't stand him. And we'd go to the meeting, you know, and then I'd put Al in the car and drive old Al home, you know, and let him out and close the car door, and I'd feel better. And in only a year and a half, I learned the lesson. You know, he'd say, go make the coffee, you know, go wear a red suit and make a fool of yourself. And a silly hat. And, you know, and I just, you know, and finally one day it came to me in a hot flash, you know, that it doesn't matter what I think, it doesn't matter how I feel, it doesn't matter what I am, it doesn't matter anything. The only thing that matters in Alcoholics Anonymous is what I do. That's all that matters. My sponsor bluntly puts it, if you move your butt, your head will come later. Well, he didn't say butt, so I cleaned it up for you guys. And that's the road I've walked now for 17 and a half years plus. And it has not been necessary for me to be drunk in that time. And that's not the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, that's a miracle. You know, I don't drink for over 17 and a half years. You know, because I could not stay sober 3 days when I took Antabuse. That's the kind of drunk I am. The kids, you said, let's go watch Daddy glow. You know? I mean, you could find your way to the bathroom by light of me, you know. But I had to drink, Antabuse or no Antabuse. And I have not had to be drunk, but that's not to me. The miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous is that I don't want to drink. The miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous is I love other people. I have let you into my life, and I am part of yours. See, there's people in this room that I have not seen maybe several years. But as soon as we see each other, it's instant love. I mean, it's right where it was the day we walked away. And I never say goodbye to anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. I say, I'll see you later. And I do. You know, there's a lady back here that used to come to me that was my vice principal, Dory. You know, I used to talk about this guy that worked for she and her husband who was very sick at the time. This guy was drunk. What'll I do about him? I said, let him drink. You know, and I used to talk to her, and, you know, and the guy got sober and they got married and they're here today. And they're as happy as clams at high tide, you know. And if I look around this room, there's people I don't see very often, but, you know, but then there are the people that you know, like at home, you know, the people who share my life with me. See, I was a lonely prisoner in here. I was all alone from the age of 4, I remember. And I've never had to be alone here. Besides, I have that power, you know. I'd briefly like to say those kids turned out fine. The guy that thought it was so good not to have me around, on my 4th AA birthday, he said to Big Keith Carpenter, "My dad has shown me how to live." And I loved his phrasing. You know, he didn't say my dad has told me how to live or my dad taught me how to live. He said, "My dad has shown me how to live." See, what he meant was I was an example to him. And that's all I'll ever be, is I'm an example of the power in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's all you'll ever be. And sometimes we're good examples and sometimes we're bad, but we're examples just the same. And that kid went on and graduated with honors from a university in California. And he served 2 years in the Peace Corps because he's a very spiritual man, wants to pay the world back. You know, he came back and got a master's degree, you know, now he makes twice the money I do. And he was an agriculture major. We don't ask him what he grows, none of our guys. None of our business, for God's sakes. He did his Peace Corps in Colombia. No, I got to tell you what he does. It's the wildest thing I've ever seen. I talked up in Portland in July, 4th of July weekend, and he lives in Washington, very close to the Oregon Bush. He came and got me, and I went up and stayed with he and his wife for a few days, and we took a river trip, you know, down the Salmon River together, and, you know, shared, and, you know, he's one of the best friends I have in the world today, and he works on a huge ranch up there, and he raises medicinal herbs. I said, "You're still in the damn business." He said, "No, Dad, you chew these roots, you'll feel real good." I said, "Yeah, but..." Whee! But, you know, he's 34 years old. He drove me back down to where the roundup was going to be. You know, he got out of the car and unloaded my suitcase. And then a big guy puts his arms around me, helped me, said, "I love you." Now, you could call that a fringe benefit if you want. I call that a miracle. And Pat will talk more about our kids. You know, 3 of them are in training for the program, but they're still having fun, so you don't argue. Never try to save somebody who's having fun. I'm Cliff Roach, and I'm an alcoholic. And that means that I can never take another drink as long as I live. Because if I have a drink, I have to go back to being that animal that I was 17 and a half years ago. And I believe that because I have seen it happen many, many, many times. But when I say I'm Cliff Roach and I'm an alcoholic, I mean that I'm an immature son of a bitch. And I need the sponsor and the steps and the people and the meetings, but most especially the steps to decrease my level of immaturity to where I learn to live in the world comfortably most of the time. And if we got any new ones here tonight, sometimes I live for like 3 and 4 weeks at a time, joyfully. I find a way to screw it up, you know. But sometimes I just wake up with my heart singing. And I never knew what that felt like in my life. You know, I have that 8 minutes all day sometimes. And I know that if I don't stay busy here and if I don't do the things I'm supposed to do here, someday my head will talk to me again and will say, "Hey, Cliff, remember the 8 minutes? So I better do the things that Alcoholics Anonymous asked me to do. Besides, it's fun. I never had so much fun in my life. I've had more laughs and more great experiences this weekend than the last 5 years I drank. And I was drinking to have a good time. But I never knew about you. And you didn't know about me. But now we know about each other. When I say I'm Cliff Roach, I'm an alcoholic, that means that I'm a member of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm very, very proud of that. That's the best thing that ever happened to me in my whole life. I believe it was given by a loving God to Bill Wilson and the early pioneers so that people like me could learn to live in the world comfortably and joyfully. See, I belong in this room. I don't really care if you think I do or not. See, I belong in this room in Texas. I have to read these sociologists in my work. I love them. They're nuttier than us. Almost as nutty as Al-Anon's. They love the word alienation. That's their favorite word. You ever see? They always italicize that. They never just print it. They say, that's what's wrong with Western civilization. We're alienated from each other. And what they mean is that there's no sense of community left in the Western world. No sense of community, no sense of belonging, having a place where you're loved and where you love. And every time I read one of those clowns, I think, why don't you drink a little more? You drink as much as I drank, you find a place where you fit and where you belong. I belong to you and I love you because I have to and now because I want to. And I know you love me the same way. I don't know if my nonsense did anybody any good. I didn't come out here to save anybody. I came here to save this. I don't know if there's anybody in this room who really needs me. But I want to tell you one thing for sure. I sure as hell need you.
I told you I was in for a treat. Cliff, in behalf of the Brazos Riverside Conference, we'd like to give you this
shopping bag.
Yeah, right.
Talking to Bruce. Well, my other luggage.
There's more. There's more. You got a complicated gift in front of people.
It's a belt buckle.
That's a belt buckle?
Mm-hmm. The whole thing? Is there more? No more?
No.
And I keep the belt buckle in this. Okay.
Or on your belt.
Or on your belt. Like that.
All right. Yeah, all right.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Are there any other announcements, Don? Have you got it? There you go.
How many degrees?
How many? That's what sobriety will do for you.
I drank 3 weeks too long.
Okay. It's been a great evening. If there are no other further announcements or anything, we'll stand and be adjourned in the usual manner.
Amen.